Sport Podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One. It's 17 to 10 anytime. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello everyone and welcome along to The Punt Podcast. Coming up is one of those rare Sundays where it's actually appropriate to use the prefix super. It's a derby day to savour, and in a few moments we'll speak to the Northern Football Correspondent for The Daily Telegraph, James Ducker, ahead of Red clashing with Blue at Old Trafford for a top-of-the-table encounter. We've got Andy Excel and Derek McGovern giving their verdict on the rest of the TV games in the Premier League, and Pete Farries, Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross will provide you with naps in the Football League. In addition, Alex Dunn has a bet on the continent. But right now, let's talk all things Manchester ahead of what could be a defining moment in the title race. It's a warm welcome to our FWA guest this week, James Ducker, who joins Derek McGovern and myself, Dave Kellner, on the podcast. A warm welcome along to the podcast, James.
Afternoon, Dave. You okay?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine, yeah. Fine, just busy as you'd expect.
Derek, welcome along to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Dave.
James, obviously it is a busy week because it's one of the most eagerly anticipated Manchester derbies for many years, I think, with the top two in the Premier League going head-to-head. And start by telling us a little bit about these two managers and whether or not you've seen a change in them this season when you compare that to last season. I mean, they are clearly two very intense characters with different philosophies as far as management is concerned. I don't think either will necessarily be displeased with the way things have materialised in the opening 15 games, but City are still 8 points clear in the Premier League.
Yeah, I think they were intense last season as well. I don't think that's necessarily changed. I think what's been interesting is we look back to their time in Spain, Mourinho in charge of Real Madrid, Guardiola at Barcelona, and that rivalry became, you know, very toxic towards the end. And I think, you know, both sort of look back in that time, and he had two clearly going toe to toe for absolutely everything in Spain, you know, and also the Champions League at times. And it was almost like a perfect storm, and, you know, Mourinho would do whatever it takes, and Guardiola eventually got sucked into that. There's actually been little to no bad blood at all between them. I think in part because they've realised they're both taking on sort of very big jobs in Manchester. There's obviously challenges from other clubs outside. I just think the situation is very different. But this season, you know, the title race is looking like increasingly looking like a battle between the two Manchester clubs. I wouldn't entirely rule Chelsea out personally, but they are there. And I think, I mean, you know, United finished what six last season and absolutely way off it. I think it's something like 24 points off the off Chelsea, the winners. So there's been a marked improvement there, and I think City were probably starting from a bit less of a lower base. But you look at what Guardiola has done this season. I think they were working towards it in the last 2 months of last season. But the sort of the quality of the football is outstanding, and clearly if they win on Sunday, they will go 11 points clear at the top, which, you know, before Christmas is in this league arguably the most competitive in Europe and one of the most competitive in the world. That would be a huge achievement, and you would think very difficult for a lot of clubs to haul back. But I mean they're both making serious strides as teams, and often we look at games and I think they are hyped and often overhyped in this country. And you think about some of the recent Liverpool United games, but, you know, I think this one, you know, the sort of expectation around it is entirely understandable. And I think particularly given we know exactly what we will get from Guardiola is, you know, hopefully we'll get quite an exciting game.
The latest betting here with William Hill: Manchester United are 23-10 to win the game, the draw 12-5, and Manchester City are 23-20. The enhanced odds: Anthony Martial to score and Manchester United to win was 4-1. That's been enhanced to 5-1. And if you think both Sergio Aguero and Romelu Lukaku are going to score in the game, that was 4-1. That's been enhanced to 5-1. Derek James was talking there. If Manchester City win the game, they're 11 points clear, which might be a gap that's too big for any of the clubs to bridge. And we'll see City win the title at a canter. This could be a defining moment in the Premier League season.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're showing City now. They're showing the kind of form they showed 5 seasons ago when everyone finally stopped laughing at them. Won the league then. They're going to win it by Easter this time around, because at the beginning of the season, if you start from a level playing field, City would have been favourites. If they're 11 points clear at Christmas, I mean, they're unbackable. That's the market for bookies to start paying out early, I think. I mean, United, they're saying it's a title decider, but it isn't, because the title is already decided. And the big surprise for me is United being so close to City, because whenever I see City, I'm impressed. Whenever I see United, I'm distinctly unimpressed. They're saying that United are not far from a title-winning team. And the only way they're right there is that, yeah, it's about 4 miles to the Crow Flies to the Etihad, so not that far. And this weekend, I tell you what, there aren't many bets that stop you in your tracks and say, hey, I'm a sure thing. Unfortunately, there aren't many women either. But City at odds against is such a bet. I think there are absolute certainties. Two bits of bad news for United. Pogba is out and Lukaku is in. Lukaku goes missing more than my remote control. I just can't have him as a striker for a championship-winning side. And I think City will show just how superior they are to United this season. Remember, they played 3 of their big 6 rivals so far this season, City, and won each one of them out of canter. This will be 4 this weekend.
23-20, Manchester City is Derek's bet for the game. How do you think the game will develop then, James, if you're talking from a tactical perspective here? Because City routinely this season, they've had 70%, 75% possession. Will Jose Mourinho allow them to dictate and dominate possession to that extent on Sunday, in your opinion?
I'm not sure. I think the game becomes a lot harder for United now Pogba is out. I think he gives them so much flexibility in the way they want to play, and particularly sort of, I think, on the counter is, you know, he's got endless energy, he's terrific legs, he's very, very good at obviously running with the ball. He retains control crucially, and obviously he's passing. There is just no one in that side who can replicate it. So that is an issue. I wouldn't be surprised if Herrera comes in and is sort of asked to shadow De Bruyne in sort of a similar fashion, maybe not exactly the same, but in a similar fashion to how he did Eden Hazard against Chelsea at Old Trafford last season. I don't think it will be totally backed against the wall, sit back, soak up the pressure but throughout the game. I just think it's a pretty risky strategy against that City side. I thought the second half of last season at Old Trafford, which is actually the last time United were beaten at home 40 games ago, when City were extraordinary for the first half. And then United really sort of came back to me. Had sort of an unusual situation of Guardiola taking off his centre-forward in Iheanacho and bringing on a defensive midfielder, Fernando. I think Mourinho will try and sort of get into those positions a bit more. I wouldn't be surprised again if he plays three at the back with wing-backs and ask Young and Valencia to try and get in behind the likes of Kyle Walker and maybe exploit some of that space. But let's make no mistake about it, Dave, you know, City will have the majority of the ball, and no one has really found a way to sort of suffocate De Bruyne and David Silva this season. I think Everton, probably with Idrissa Gueye and Schneiderlin, surprisingly, given their struggles as the season progressed, did the best of it. They obviously got a point against City in August. You know, it will be interesting to see how Matic and Herrera, you know, if he starts, which you're expecting, will, you know, cope with them. I mean, it can't be an entirely containing job, because, you know, you've got to have an outlet and stuff. But I do think Mourinho will want and expect his team to be tighter defensively, you know, across the board than they were against Arsenal. But by the same token, you know, they will have to be clinical. They will have to be clinical breaking forward as they were in that game, as they were against Watford, and as they've started to look increasingly now.
What's the prediction, James, then, for this game?
I don't know. I'm often, Dave, we find these games, I just find it so hard to make predictions because, you know, team loses a player, you know, for a red card or whatever, and they can swing both ways. I mean, what I would say is it won't surprise me at all if City win, but this idea that they're going to absolutely walk away with it, I find sort of quite hard to fathom personally. Whatever people think about the two teams from an aesthetic point of view, and clearly Guardiola's side are sort of are very, very eye-catching, certainly one for the purists, and I think for a lot of people play the way people want to see sort of football played. Mourinho sides just very, very rarely get heavily beaten. You know, they're always in the game. So if City do win, I don't expect more than a goal or something in it. But I don't think a draw is adequate for United. Yes, they remain at 8 points. Yes, there's a long way to go. Yes, things can change dramatically over December and January, but I think they really need to go out and find a way to win this game.
Let's talk about England next. The World Cup draw was made last Friday, and England got drawn with Belgium, Panama and Tunisia in Group G, and they are to win Group G, 5-4 second favourites behind Belgium, who are 10-11. There was a bit of cash for England in the outright market as well, given that they've got what looks on paper to be an easy draw, 16-1 with William Hill, now England to win the World Cup 2018. Derek, Gareth Southgate will be pilloried in the press if he doesn't manage to get England out of this group.
Well, yeah. I mean, he knew what his ideal group was before the draw, the Bee Gees, but he pretty much got it as well, didn't he? Belgium, Tunisia and Panama. On the evidence of recent World Cups, though, Dave, you've got to say it's also ideal for Belgium, Tunisia and Panama. I mean, because England, I tell you what, no matter who'd be in charge of England, and I don't think we've got any kind of manager in Gareth Southgate, I think they should get out of that group, but it's England. Absolutely no surprise if you made a pig's ear of it. Even Panama, I mean, what do we know about them? The only thing you know about them is that when you play for them, you don't win caps, you win hats. But, you know, we all said that about Costa Rica, how bad they were, and, you know, they humbled England in the last World Cup. You go to a World Cup with England, you've got no faith in them whatsoever. I'll tell you what, I'll be looking to oppose them, because the bookies will always underprice England at World Cups because they know there's a million mug patriotic punters wanting to waste money on them. Well, I always take the opposite opinion, and so far it's stood me in good stead.
England are 16-1 to win the World Cup. With Gareth Southgate in charge, James, do you feel that there's a difference in attitude now with this England squad? He seems intent on trying out different formations and personnel, still maybe a bit blinkered as far as the goalkeeping situation is concerned. And Dele Alli's form at the moment, I mean, we're a long way away from the opening game of the tournament, but that might be a worry for Gareth Southgate as well. Do you see anything different with this England setup compared to maybe the previous, decade now, I suppose we're talking, James?
Yeah, I think there are. I think there are differences. You know, like Derek says, I don't really, to be honest, read too much into what's happened in qualifying because, you know, we look historically at our performances in tournament, and it's certainly it offers no indication of how we will then fare, you know, a World Cup or in a European Championships where we've traditionally sort of deeply underwhelmed everyone. I think it's nice to see he's showing a bit more tactical flexibility, and he's obviously looked at 3-3-5-2 and 4-3-3, and I think there's shown some ability to, you know, play different systems, and we don't just have a routine 4-4-2 plan A and then look absolutely positively clueless when things don't go our way. My concern is, you know, is he going to settle on a system between now and June and play his first choice 11 in it, so we get to the tournament and bar the odd injury, or you know, bar one or two changes depending on perhaps club form, we know what the team is and what we're looking at, and there's been time to work in it, because traditionally when we've got to tournaments, no one's got a clue what our best team is, no one knows what our best formation is, because we just continually change things around. So that will be quite refreshing to see. You actually look at the Belgian team, obviously stacked full of great attacking players, less assured defensively, as Roberto Martinez teams invariably are. I think that in some strange way, they're the games England might do a little bit better in. Panama and Tunisia, we probably expect 9-10 men behind the ball. And if you actually look at how we've done against the likes of Algeria and Iceland, in that we struggle. We struggle against teams that we don't think we've got the sort of nous or the craft to often open up those sides. So I think that they will be probably more difficult than they might be for a Germany, or one of the leading lights of European football. But one of the things I do like about Southgate is he expects sort of all players to take on sort of responsibility and leadership, and there hasn't been this. He's yet to point at a captain, has he, for example? So I think he just, you know, in the past there's been a huge onus around sort of England's captain, whether it's Wayne Rooney or David Beckham, and I think he wants to get away from a lot of that sort of fanfare and ensure that all sort of players take on responsibility. Ali's form is a concern. Obviously we are only in December and there is a long way to go there, but he's been way off the pace, I think, for several weeks now. I think Ali on form gets into the England team. Of course he does, but what will be nice to see is if players are, you know, even some of our big name players are in very, very poor form for their club, that, you know, Southgate takes sort of tough decisions and goes with the informed players, because historically we look at those, trying to shoehorn players in because they're big names but they're not necessarily playing well, does not work.
I don't want to get carried away, Derek, but I'm already looking forward to getting knocked out by Germany in the quarterfinals in Russia.
Well, a quarterfinal exit would be considered a good World Cup, wouldn't it, for England? No humiliation, no back before your postcard jabs from Scottish fans, and probably plenty of excuses like the unusual flight of the ball, you know, especially when Chris Smalling kicks it. There's always a problem, isn't it, with the flight of a ball at a World Cup. I don't know why the press makes such a big fuss, because England don't see much of it anyway once we're there. But there's that, and also you wonder which of the players who want to make the World Cup squad will injure his metatarsal 2 months beforehand. That's the big, always a big guessing game, that one.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill, and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
Now it's time to look at the TV games in the Premier League this weekend, and Andy Excel joins myself and Derek on the podcast. First of all, warm welcome and good afternoon to you, Andy.
Good afternoon.
Big Super Sunday coming up. We'll get stuck into that in due course. But let's start with West Ham versus Chelsea, which is the first of the TV games. 12:30 kickoff on Saturday. This one, the Hammers are 6-1 to win it. The draw 3-1 with Chelsea 1-2. Enhanced odds, Chelsea to win both halves was 13-5. That's been enhanced to 3-1. And if you think Manuel Lanzini's going to score in a West Ham win, that was 12-1. It's been enhanced to 16-1. All five of these games we're going to preview on the podcast are hashtag your odds as well. So if you want your bet on the William Hill website or on the app, just tweet in to @WilliamHill using the hashtag your odds. West Ham did reasonably well against City last weekend. Wasn't enough to give them a point, but they frustrated below par City until the second half. And away from Pedro Obiang's goal, they had some chances as well. I thought Mikel Antonio played well. Marko Arnautovic came on for the last 10 minutes, and even though he's been the biggest flop all season, did okay. But it's how West Ham respond having gone through 90 minutes against City, Andy.
Yeah, I know I mentioned Dad's Army a couple of times last week, but it's how the old fella's legs are holding up this week. That's one thing. I just, like I say, they just strike me as an old team, and it's going to be tough for them to do 2 weeks on a row. And when you're at home, there's more of an expectancy for you to go forward as well. And it's when they're having to track back that they have problems. Well, when you're tracking back from 20 yards from your own goal, you don't really have to do it. So, I don't like them. I don't like the Moyes appointment. I'm still not going to change my tack because of last week. So I think Chelsea will win, but probably just by the odd goal.
Chelsea to win by a goal to nil is 6-1. Chelsea to win 2-1 is 15-2. If you think West Ham can hold out till half-time, draw half-time, Chelsea full-time available at 3-1. They're starting to turn it on now as well, Derek, Chelsea. Eden Hazard at times against Newcastle was unplayable. And West Ham have won just two of their last 22 Premier League games against Chelsea as well. Lost both matches last season by 2-1. Andy expecting a similar scoreline this time round.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with that. 1-2 is the price for Chelsea, and 1-2 could well be the scoreline. I can see Chelsea winning this fairly easily. I mean, West Ham's last two Premier League games were live on telly, and the next two are live on telly. Now, I don't know whether that's good or bad news for David Moyes, but it's absolutely disastrous news for the viewer. Because they're no fun to watch West Ham. They've gone from European hopefuls to relegation candidates in a year, and that was even before David Moyes got there. He's only just been appointed. He's already fourth favourite for the sack race. Now, I've looked, the sack race in my dictionary is defined as an event in which contestants compete by jumping forward with their legs enclosed in a sack. And that's exactly the way West Ham seem to play, minus a bit about going forward. I just can't have them. Yeah, they did well keeping City at bay for a long period, but it ain't that hard. If you're a Premier League team, it ain't that hard to camp out around your box and keep even the best teams out. But you'll end up losing, but you won't get battered. You'll end up losing by 1 or 2 goals, which is what happened. They've got to come out against Chelsea. They're at home. Their fans won't allow them to camp around the box again, park the bus. No chance. Chelsea will win this. I reckon it'll be by more than a 1-goal margin, but 1-2 is an absolute certainty for Chelsea.
Chelsea minus one in the match is 29-20. On to Newcastle versus Leicester, 5:30 kickoff on Saturday. Newcastle 6-4 to win this game. The draw 9-4. Leicester 9-5. Dwight Gayle to score and Newcastle to win was 100-30. That's been enhanced to 4-1, and if you think Jamie Vardy is going to score and Leicester are going to win the game, that was 14-5. That's been enhanced to 7-2. Derek, are we starting to see a little bit of the Leicester of 2015-2016? Riyad Mahrez starting to turn it on a little bit, and they don't look as defensive as many anticipated following the recruitment of Claude Puel.
No, they're not. You're right. I am seeing a return to Leicester form. In fact, I'd argue that they are probably outside the top six. If you got rid of the top six, Leicester would probably win the league. They won it with the top six a few seasons ago, remember? That's how much I'm rating them at the moment. And they're playing a Newcastle side whose manager I rate extremely highly, as you know, but whose players I don't. It's obvious that Benitez, the manager, needs money to build in January, but he's got as much chance to get more cash from Mike Ashley as I have of switching a Sky channel on at random and seeing something other than an advert. And when a Newcastle match is being screened, that's generally a blessing. They're not playing well. The fans are getting a bit restless. Lost a lot of matches recently. And I'm focusing on one player here. I always say Perez. He divides opinion at Newcastle. He's played all 14 matches they played this season. On the one hand, fans think he's a waste of space. On the other hand, you've got five fingers. One goal in 14 Premier League appearances he's made. Alan Pardew bought him from Tenerife for $1.5 million plus 8 timeshares. And he's done absolutely nothing. He's done nothing in a Newcastle shirt. And I'm beginning to wonder. I'm never going to doubt Rafa Benitez for what he did at Liverpool. But a lot of people on Tyneside are wondering just what he sees in that player. I might be wrong. Maybe he'll come out and have a blinder at the weekend. I can't see. I think Leicester are certainties.
Derek's going to end up changing his tune as far as Benitez is concerned. At the end of the season, he's going to be slagging him off on this podcast.
I know, he's moving in that direction.
What do you make to this, Andy?
Well, to me, team use is a massive thing in this. And from the Newcastle point of view, Lascelles, Dummett and Atsu have all been out for a while and are all possible to be back this week. Now, if all three of them were back, that would change the outlook on this game quite considerably.
Would it change the prices?
Probably not, because they're not well enough known. I think if Lascelles was back, you might see a late change, you know, in the last hour before the game.
Yeah.
But, I think he's massive for them both as a player and as a leader, and they've just been missing that massively. So it's really not one to get involved in until you know the teams, I think. And if they're not playing, get on Leicester, like Derek says. But if they are playing, I think it's going to be a close game, possibly a draw.
Leicester to win the game for Derek at 9-5, the draw 9-4. That's right, isn't it, Derek? You fancy Leicester here?
Big time.
Alex Dunn here, the better half of the two Euro boys. And we need a better nickname, by the way, Sam. If you're listening, try and think of Euro boys as just... I don't like it at all. Anyway, we were in some pretty good form until Sam took over the reins last week. He's now having a week's holiday, and that means that hopefully we can have a winner. Monaco take on Troyes on Saturday evening, 7 o'clock in France. Monaco 3 is on the draw, 4-1. Troyes are 8-1. Troyes come here off the back of a defeat against Guingamp. Prior to that, they lost against PSG, but they were good against Paris. They really were. They played well. They are not a dreadful side. They got big praise off the back of that from PSG. Monaco are having a bit of a sticky time of things by all accounts. They are getting tonked left, right and centre, granted by some good teams, sometimes in Europe. That's okay. But I think here, first and foremost, Monaco will just be trying to win. So for all that people will be looking at the threes on and going, yes, gimme, gimme, gimme. I was looking for a pro Troyes bet, and they are quite hard to find. But Monaco to win an under 2.5 goals. So basically Monaco to win 1-0 or 2-0. So the same thing that happened in the PSG game for Troyes, basically. Hopefully be a little bit resilient. Can't really see them scoring, but hopefully they can limit Monaco's attacking threat. Monaco to win under 2.5 goals is 11-4, and that is the European nap this week.
On to Sunday's game. Southampton versus Arsenal is first up, and this is a midday kickoff. Southampton 14-5, the draw 13-5, with Arsenal 10-11. Arsenal to win both halves was 4-1, that's been enhanced to 9-2. And if you think Charlie Austin is going to score in a Southampton win, that was 5-1, that's been enhanced to 7-1. There's still maybe a tendency at times to get seduced by Arsenal, as the man sitting next to me was last weekend. But even though they were beaten by Manchester United, it was because of an outstanding goalkeeping display. David De Gea produced one of the performances of the last few years in net, but still Steve McManaman gave the man of the match to Jesse Lingard for two tap-ins.
He's unbelievable sometimes, the decisions that come up with there. De Gea reminded me of me in my pomp. He was that good. I'm not put off my back in Arsenal again here. That was a good performance, but just thwarted by one man. The performance is the key there. The performances have still been good in recent weeks. I think the confidence is still there. We've been wondering for weeks when Southampton are going to play a decent team. Well, I'd argue they're playing one here. Derek might differ with me. But, I think Arsenal will win. And even that enhanced price on to win both halves. You're talking about a team that always scores goals, so they could well win both halves. So.
Yeah, 9-2, that is, if you think Arsenal are going to win both halves of this game. I mentioned Charlie Austin there as well briefly. He's got 7 in his last 10 Premier League starts for Southampton, including 3 in his last 2. For some reason, Southampton have persisted with Shane Long for the majority of the season, Derek, despite the fact he's not scored in a million years. But Charlie Austin did get the nod last weekend when scoring against Bournemouth. How do you view this fixture?
I think Arsenal are certainties. I really do. You look at Southampton's home form, and some of the bum teams they've played and not put away. I mean, we're going right back to the opening day of the season, Swansea at home, 0-0. They played Wolves in the League Cup, got beat 2-0. Watford went there and won. Man United went there and won. Newcastle went there and drew. Burnley went there and won. How can Arsenal not go there and win? It's not going to happen. I think Arsenal are real good things. And yet, you know, a lot of Arsenal fans were moaning last week because they outplayed United and lost 3-1. Well, welcome to Liverpool's world, because for years we did that when Fergie was in his pomp, but Liverpool would outplay Man United and lose 3-1 because of two David James Howellers in the second half, season after leading season. So I've got no bleeding heart for Arsenal, but they will win this, 10-11 certainty.
On to the two derbies then. Start with the Merseyside derby at Anfield, Liverpool versus Everton. 100-30 on Liverpool to win this game. The draw 4-1, Everton 9-1. The enhancements, Philip Coutinho to score and Liverpool to win was 11-10. That's been enhanced to 13-10. If you think Mohamed Salah and Sadio Mane are both going to score in the match, That was 13-5. That's been enhanced to 7-2. And another interesting enhancement, red card in this game, was 21-10. That's been enhanced to 5-2. There have been 21 red cards in the last 50 Merseyside derbies in total. And Derek, it's a fixture that Liverpool have had the best of in recent times. They're unbeaten in 14 in all competitions against Everton. That's just one game short of their longest ever run without defeat against their Merseyside rivals. They went 15 back in the mid-70s. And if you're a Liverpool fan, Derek, which you are, you must be going into this game with extreme confidence the way they're playing.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, everyone, he said when you get to a Merseyside derby, the form book goes out the window. But now, these days, it doesn't. The only thing that goes out the window is an Evertonian telly when he's watching it, because Liverpool have had the upper hand for so long now. In 2010, that was the last time Everton beat Liverpool. That was the year of, remember, the Vuvuzela, the worst thing to hit football since Big Sam got his coaching badges. And I find that incredible, actually. Big Sam has coaching badges. I just think Liverpool are certainties here. Everton were still in the Europa League on Thursday, and that came as an even bigger surprise than the fact they're still in the Premier League. They're playing like a side going nowhere. I know Big Sam's come in, and he won the last game against Huddersfield, I think it was. But big deal, you know, it was Huddersfield at home. They beat West Ham. They're a poor side, Everton, with a defence that's way past its best. And you look at Liverpool, what they've done in recent weeks, what they did in midweek to Spartak Moscow. The Russians have gone home for some state-sponsored moping after that. An absolute brilliant performance by Liverpool. And I know people are saying, well, Spartak Moscow were useless. But it was a Champions League game, and Liverpool have won, well, in the group, they've won 7-0 twice. I don't see Real Madrid, Barcelona, Arsenal, Man United doing that. Fantastic. And, yeah, they'll always have problems defensively under Jurgen Klopp, but Everton won't have the ball long enough to pose problems. Liverpool are saying that this is as close to a banker as you're going to get.
100-30 on Liverpool. If you look in the handicap markets, which Derek clearly will be doing, Liverpool -1 is 3-4. Liverpool -2 is in the betting at 2-1.
Get on that.
You like that 2-1, Derek?
Yeah, two right. Liverpool win this in a cakewalk.
Sadio Mane, by the way, scored in both Premier League Merseyside derbies last season. I mentioned him in the enhanced odds. And if you fancy Mane just to score in the match, that's available at even money. Andy?
Well, it might be a game to try and construct a your odds bet, because I'm with Derek. I just can only see one team winning. You've mentioned the enhanced red card, which doesn't seem a bad price, but then Everton defenders have got to get somewhere near a Liverpool player in order to get one. I just think Liverpool are going to win this easy. If I was looking for a bet, I'd be looking at the double result, Liverpool to win both halves. They've taken the lead in the last six games. So, you know, you wouldn't be as surprised if they scored early and went on to win quite comfortably. So small odds on 3-4. That looks a decent bet to me.
We finished the weekend with the big one, the Manchester derby.
Bigger than the Merseyside derby.
It is this year, I think. Manchester United versus Manchester City. I mentioned the odds earlier. 23-10 United. The draw 12-5 City. 23-20. And we spoke to James Ducker earlier on in the podcast about this match. And Derek thinks that City are certainties at 23-20. They were beaten midweek, Andy, by Shakhtar Donetsk, which ended their 28-game unbeaten run, but they'd already qualified top of the group in the Champions League. Pep Guardiola made changes. They'll be back to full strength and full fitness for this match.
Yeah, you could probably read two things into that midweek game. Is A, it didn't really mean much to City, and B, Shakhtar are probably better than people give them credit for. The interesting bit in this game is just how does Mourinho go about this? At home to City, does he park the bus? And does he try and win the game that way? Because if he does that and doesn't win it, how are his fans going to take to that? Do you know what I mean? Just effectively rolling over at home to City and getting beat. You know, it's a big game for United. If they lose this game and City are then away with the league and you've just rolled over in front of them. But on the other end, if you go and attack them, that could be the worst thing you could do. So it's really intriguing how he goes about this game. I think it'll be normal modus operandi for him. But I think the players will be feeling quite confident after recent results. And can they actually carry out the plan?
Without Paul Pogba, it's going to be tough. The stats without Paul Pogba this season, without him, they've played 7, won 4, lost 2 and drawn 1. The goals scored dips significantly on average as well without Pogba. With him this season, they've played 8, won 7 and drawn 1, scoring an average of 3 per game. It goes down to less than 1.5 per game when Pogba's not in that starting lineup, and I think that affects the way Jose Mourinho, Andy, sets his team up as well. They're more defensive when they've not got Paul Pogba in the centre of midfield.
I think you're absolutely right, and going back to what I was talking about, I think that might be his excuse for doing it. I think he'll park the bus and try and win in his way he's been doing it, nick a goal, and he'll just use the excuse that Pogba wasn't available.
What's your prediction?
Low goals, 0-0 or 1-1.
Not much of a Naps update, only one winning nap from last weekend, so I thought to pad this section out, use up my time wisely, I'd compile all of Derek McGovern's best jokes from the years on the punt. Here we go.
Very good. Very good, Mr. Fell.
I'm almost insulted he's used that rather than mention I was the winning nap.
One winning nap then, Andy XL, West Ham plus 3, even money. Well done, Andy.
There you go.
Postscript. So sneak in as a postscript.
Sneak in there at the end. Just the one winning nap last week. We promise we'll try and do better this week. I can't promise you winners, but we'll try and do better. Have you got anything, Derek, that stands out this weekend?
Yeah, as my nap, you mean? My nap always stands out, you know that. I'm trying to think of a reason not to lump on Man City here, other than lack of funds. But I think I found a better bet. Brighton, 2-1 to win at Huddersfield. Two sides who are going to be fighting a relegation dogfight, I think. Huddersfield, definitely. But Brighton, every time I've seen them, apart from maybe the Liverpool game last week, they've looked a side that I think, you know, can hold their own. Huddersfield is just awful.
Got to defend Huddersfield again. They're all right at home. And I don't agree with that, Nat. But
there you go.
What I will do, even despite that, I'll stick with his lot. Liverpool, half-time, full-time, 3-4.
I mean, I'm struggling this weekend, chaps, like usual.
It's a horrible set of fixtures, I think.
Really is. It really is a tough coupon. I'm going to go with Chelsea -1 at 29-20. I think they'll give West Ham a good going over this weekend. So Brighton at 2-1, Liverpool half-time, full-time in the double result market, and Chelsea -1. The Nap treble this weekend pays 11.86-1. Whoa!
Hi, my name's Pete Farries, and after a couple of dry weeks in the Championship, I'm going to change tack a little bit and look instead toward a goal scorer. Britt Assombalonga, of course, Middlesbrough's Britt Assombalonga, is 11-10 any time to score for Gary Monk's, to be fair, struggling Middlesbrough side. Ipswich, by the way, 19-5 in this game, the draw 13-5, Borough 3-4. But that 11-10 any time for Britt Assombalonga looks great. He got 2 braces against Ipswich last season, he's got 11 goals this season, and to be honest, I think he's going to want to start firing Middlesbrough to just doing that bit better. So I'm going to change tack and go for a goal scorer anytime. It's Britt Assombalonga at 11-10. Let's hear what Gav Puchalowski has to say on League One. Full fixture list in League One. There's a number of bets I like this weekend. Blackburn at 5-4 to win away at Peterborough. I like Bury at 7-5 to win at home to Wimbledon. But I'm actually sticking with a side who let me down last weekend. I predicted Oldham to get a draw at Southend. They lost 2-0, but they were well on top in the first half. They went a goal behind, they had a penalty, and they missed it. I'm pretty convinced had Oldham scored that penalty, it would have been a completely different outcome. But Oldham are 21-20 to win at home to Northampton. Northampton's form is shocking. Checkatrade Trophy, FA Cup and League One. Their last 5 games, lost 4, drawn 1, haven't scored a single goal in their last 5 games. They are struggling. And Oldham at home, that's when they're at the strongest. That's when they're scoring their most goals. Yes, last time out at home to Wimbledon, they drew 0-0. Before that, they scored 3 at home against Rochdale, 2 at home against Scunthorpe, 2 at home against Bury. And in the Checkatrade Trophy, they did score 4. And the one thing with Oldham is they do keep going to the 90th minute. Check out when they score late goals against Blackburn, 90th minute, against Bury, 90th minute, against Scunthorpe, 81, against Rochdale, 83 and 86. They do score late goals, Oldham, because they keep pushing and they never quit. I think Oldham minus one at 13-5 is a big play in this one. I think Oldham and over 2.5 goals at 2-1 is a play. But as my Knapp selection, Oldham scoring plenty against Northampton not scoring at all, they are my Knapp selection at 21-20 to win on Saturday. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
Most eyes in League Two are on the clash of the top two this week as Luton play Notts County, mine are not. The bottom two clubs are also meeting, and that's where we go, Chesterfield against Barnet. Because in the last round of league fixtures, we opposed Barnet, and that came good. A 2-0 defeat at home to Grimsby makes it four league defeats in five, and still just four league wins all season, three of which came in the opening month. That's how badly things are going at Barnet. They're off the bottom of the league, but only on goal difference because of Chesterfield, but these are two teams heading in different directions. For Chesterfield, it's only one defeat in the last seven in the league, and Chesterfield have 7 points from the last three games. Barnet have 7 points from the last 14. And Chesterfield have also won the last two on their own patch, three if you include a penalty shootout victory over Man City's Academy in the EFL Trophy. So put another way, 13 league games into this season, Chesterfield had just 5 points and Barnet had 12. Seven league games further on, they're level on points. Christian Dennis has scored 6 in the last 7, 7 of the last 9 league games. Midfielder Jack McCourt with 4 goals in the last 5. They are worth watching, but no prices at the time of recording. But 13 Chesterfield goals in the last 7 league games suggests they will outscore a Barnet side who do tend to get goals on the road themselves. 17-5 on Chesterfield to win and both teams to score is huge. But as always, I'm sticking to an outright for my Knapp, and it's a still surprisingly odds against price for a home side in good form against a Barnet side who just can't get it together, and it's 13-10 on Chesterfield on the outright.
And that is it for this week's edition of the Pump Podcast. I do hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you to our FWA guest, James Ducker, for his preview of the Manchester Derby. Derek McGovern, Andy Excel, Pete Farries, Gav Pushlowski, Al Ross and Alex Dunn, your other contributors for this edition of The Punt. If you want to check out all the betting, please go to sports.williamhill.com. Alternatively, you can access all the odds on the William Hill app. All that's left to do is for me to wish you the best of luck if you're having a bet on the football here with William Hill this weekend.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.